It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us. History is becoming increasingly accessible to us online. Newspapers and books are digitized, historic census records are easy to navigate and search through, and images and video of historic artifacts can be viewed. But despite all of these technological advances, we can't experience living in the past while sitting in front of our computers. Old World Wisconsin, which is sponsored by the Wisconsin Historical Society, is known for its living museum. Crops are grown there, livestock is raised there, and historic primitive buildings from around the state have found a home there. Jennifer Van Haften is the museum's Associate Director of Programs and Historical Resources. She told Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson how the museum balances its hands-on mission while also trying to preserve the artifacts.
We are definitely dedicated to preserving history, especially items that are related to Wisconsin, in the best possible museum ethic, code of ethics and rules and that kind of thing. But what we do try to do a lot of around Old World is to make reproductions or find items that maybe don't necessarily have a Wisconsin provenance, a Wisconsin background, but still represent something from Wisconsin, and we add those to something we call a teaching collection. So all of those items are designated, you know, for use with the public, with our staff that are here to chat with people. They're there to demonstrate, to get people to try it out. So it's so much better than, you know, maybe you see something at your local historical society or you've seen an interesting spinning wheel over at the Milwaukee Public Museum, but that's behind a window or a glass or something, and you're like, how does that work? And we're lucky enough that we can demonstrate how it works and then say to you, hey, you want to try this out yourself and have you try it out, you know, see what it feels like, see what it sounds like. You know, we have wood-burning stoves that are cast iron for cooking. You smell the stuff coming out of the oven. You stir things in ceramic bowls with wooden spoons. Not much different than what we do today, but there's still the technologies of, you know, there's no timer on that oven, so you need to check it maybe a little bit more often. Your measuring cups are not as standard as they are nowadays, and so you find out that it's why grandma was a pinch of this and a little bit of that is because she was really just kind of guesstimating herself too and doing more proportions than rather an exact science of measuring cups and spoons. And being able to sit down in places, we've got one location where we've remade the bed. It's a reproduction bed, and you can lay on it and see what corn husks inside a tick feels like. So we try really hard to make things as accessible as possible. On the other hand, people do get the opportunity to see real artifacts out on our site, too. An environment where there's no air conditioning and there's no windows to keep the dust from blowing in and things like that can be harsh on these items, but we don't want to remove them from the environment either because it just makes the buildings feel lived in. They're fuller, they're richer. This is what a family's life must have been like back in the past, depending on where you happen to step into a building on our site.
What happens with the preservation of the artifacts, especially if they are outside or in these buildings that don't have the air conditioning or most likely don't have a now standard furnace? How do you preserve these artifacts?
We do something that's called preventative conservation. So a lot of it has to do with basic housekeeping like we do at home. And I bet you didn't know that you were preserving things in your home. When you sweep out the dust, when you dust off surfaces, that's removing gritty things that can wear down surfaces. When you just try not to use them very much, not get your hands all over them, that helps protect things. We do have a staff person of one with, you know, a few good core volunteers, and she goes around every spring and every fall. And a number of items in the fall are removed to a building that does have heating and cooling systems that are appropriate for preservation. So at least 6 months out of the year, our very delicate stuff are in interiors that, you know, protect them. But like I said, we hate to not put them back out because then, you know, you lose the fullness of what life would have been like in the past. But a lot of preventive conservation, there's a lot of vacuuming of textiles in the spring and the fall. The curator is out vacuuming spaces where the dustpans and dust brooms haven't gotten everything. So it's just real constant maintenance and just making sure you keep the dust off as much as possible.
If you had a textile, for instance, that had a rip in it, would you have the curator or the preservation specialist fix it, or would you allow the hole to be there? Because then you'd be maintaining the history instead of manipulating today's technology onto the original textile. How would you manage that?
It always depends on circumstances. So depending on the provenance, if it has a really strong Wisconsin connection, a really strong connection to any of our families that our buildings represent on the site, some of those things probably won't necessarily end up in our buildings if they do start to get into a deteriorated condition. Sometimes we do send things out to professional conservators. In fact, our altar railing over at our St. Peter's Church, we had a conservator come in and refurbish it, repaint it with appropriate tools. Reversible methods are things that we often talk about in the museum field, all those kinds of things. And it's still out there where people can see it. We did get the funds to be able to hire a conservator to do that. So depending on the item and how special it is and what its connection might be, we'll get somebody in to fix it. Otherwise, it might be removed from our environment. We might make a reproduction of it to protect it, and that's often what happens. A number of tables and chairs out here have been removed, but they have been reproduced, and those are replaced in the buildings to take care of them.
Does a factor or a different kind of preservation happen when you have these plexiglass walls that are barring the people from the original rooms?
We try to avoid those as much as possible, but a number of those particular rooms either have original carpeting, original furniture that we can't necessarily, we don't have enough staff people to say, you know, this is not appropriate to sit on because we actually are trying to preserve it for future generations, but we do have a chair over here for you to try. So we don't necessarily have enough staff to put in every room to explain everything that everybody sees. So yeah, we do try to maintain the integrity of some of these items. But if some of the carpeting is original, and if we had people walking over it every day with the dust and things like that, it would get worn out. So that would be why we maintain some of our rooms with kind of plexis in between the visitor and the items in the rooms.
And also the oils on your hands as well can be kind of detrimental in a way to these original artifacts.
Oh yeah, that's definitely part of it too. But we try to maintain as much of a, this is what life was like. So for the 1860s, we want people to feel like, oh, I'm stepping into an 1860s home. So we don't want to hand them booties. We don't want to hand them cotton gloves. We want them to feel like that they're coming into a house and maybe they are get invited to the back kitchen to help the hired girl make the cookies for the family's dessert or something like that. And so a number of the items in the kitchens or in our dining rooms, a number of rooms are reproduction items so that people can handle, can carry around. And it's interesting how you can find a lot of these things online and websites, and there's kind of a small market for it, but a number of living history sites around the country kind of keep that market going, and that's great for us because then that means we can add more things that people can try out and see and just imagine with that item in their hand what life must have been like.
And you can also change out the exhibit instead of, well, I've already been to Old World Wisconsin. I know what's already there. But you are able to change out some of those artifacts and to kind of change also the different eras that you're representing, correct?
Well, we do have certain eras that each building is designed to represent. But everything that's going on in each building changes from day to day. And so, like in our 1860 Sanford home, during the month of August, we're doing our Civil War encounters. And so we can bring out some reproduction items that represent what people would have been doing on the home front for relief efforts for the soldiers. And so today, right now, we have a number of different things. We've got our shooting mittens, and actually they're reproductions, and people can actually try them out, try making them themselves. And so we have a number of felt pieces out here, and then thread and needles, and people can examine them and put their hands in them if they want to. And see what a shooting mitten was like. And then there are also our relief items. And so they would have been filling bags, and we often have bags for people to fill things in. This particular month, we have clothing that guests can try on and see what a hoop skirt was like or what a long skirt was like and just kind of get a sense of what it was like to live in a skirt. So we're really excited to offer that particular thing every day. So that's neat to have. And like I said, again, it's to give people more of a sense of, if I lived back then, what would this feel like?
things that you really cannot explore or experience while surfing online.
And that's what I always tell my kids too. My son is a very online sort of entity, and when I try to explain to him, you know, but it's not the same as going there. Or I had an argument with my daughter about she didn't want to grow up and have to dissect animals in high school science classes, and we were discussing it, and she's like, well, why couldn't we just do that online? And I'm like, but it's not the same, honey. It really
you need the formaldehyde smell.
You need to get in there and see the squishiness and understand what it's really like. But yeah, I mean, I think that goes for history as well, too, is that the United States is so lucky to have so many living history museums, and if you've got one in your backyard, you really should try it on for size. And Old World Wisconsin is great because it can take you from the 1840s all the way up to the 19-teens. So you can cover a good portion of the 19th century, you know, checking out our entire site.
Definitely. Old World Wisconsin right now is featuring the Civil War, and the interpreters play such an essential role to this because they have to study and interpret what it was like to be a person, whether it's a soldier or a family member back home, during the Civil War, what it was like. So what do they need to do in order to embrace the role of these people from 200 years ago? How much studying do they need to do?
Quite a bit, and we don't expect everybody to know everything. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, most of the people, when they first come on, they are assigned a particular building or a particular farmstead. And so they do have a manual that gives them a lot of information and background about the household, where it came from in Wisconsin, what was going on at the time, what the ethnic background of the family was. Old World has actually three 1860s time period houses. One is a Norwegian ethnicity, one is a German ethnicity, and then the one that we're checking out today is Yankee, so anybody who came from the New England areas. And all those people had different foods that they ate and different beliefs about, you know, whether they should go to war or not. And a lot of that information is already in those manuals to begin with. And then additionally, any of our events that we do, we set out some additional information. So for the Civil War encounters, we added some more information about sending relief boxes to soldiers and filling bags and rolling bandages and what they would do about packing those boxes and the cookies they would bake, or they would bake entire cakes and ship those. I mean, and I think about soldiers today and people baking them cakes and sending treats and goodies. It was the exact same thing in the 1860s. And I think we don't always make the connection that we really haven't changed that much from, you know, 1860 to the present day. And, you know, we always think about how foods need better preservation or something. But really, you know, if you've got a cake in a box for a week, it's going to be essentially okay. I think we've all eaten a little bit stale stuff just because it was a sweet treat, nice to have. The families probably feel the same way our families do today, who have soldiers over in Afghanistan, you know, or left behind in Iraq to, you know, teach the Iraqi soldiers, and they want to send them things. And that's exactly how these families in the 1860s felt about their soldiers going off to war. And interestingly, the different immigrant groups, a lot of them really did support the Union cause and felt it was their duty to sign up. So you will see Norwegian units, you will see German units, and many of them out of Wisconsin, you'll see Irish, entirely Irish units, and there's lots of histories behind them. We can't cover all of that in one sitting, but what we hope to do is to pique everybody's interest enough that they'll go looking for the information additionally. And many great stories are told, like by the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. So, you know, there's another place where you can go for more information. And so we're just trying to get the interest started and hoping that people will pursue it a little bit more than when they get home, when they travel elsewhere on the road. You know, just ask those questions. Pick up a book. Watch a television program. Just add to their knowledge.
Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for telling us about Old World Wisconsin and what we can see at Civil War events here at Old World Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. And we are doing many Civil War-related things throughout the entire month of August through Labor Day, September 1st.
Excellent. Thank you.
Jennifer Van Haften is the Associate Director of Program and Historical Resources at Old World Wisconsin. She oversees the events that take place at the museum. She spoke with Lake Effect's Eleanor Peterson. Tomorrow, we'll speak with Ryan Schwartz about this weekend's Civil War event, Gone for a Soldier. And there's more information about the museum and all of its events at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. We'll take one last break, and then a Lake Effect essayist and first-generation immigrant recalls the distance she felt between her and the people around her as she was growing up in Milwaukee. That's coming up next on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.